She's got everything she needs. She's an artist, she don't look back. She's got everything she needs. She's an artist, she don't look back. She can take the dark out of the nighttime and paint the daytime black.
We're doing a series of artist interviews that we call The Artist Speaks. In the studio today is Heidi Jube. Heidi is a bookbinder and painter and serves as the executive director of Visual Arts Minnesota, an organization that creates opportunities for visual artists to exhibit and promote their work. She also creates custom hand-bound books for clients while teaching residencies and workshops in book arts, bookbinding, and the creative process. Welcome to the studio, Heidi.
Thank you for inviting me.
So let's see. You're a bookmaker, painter, teacher, administrator, mother, master's degree student. Did I leave anything out?
I used to be a gardener, but I gave that up.
So you're setting priorities now.
Yeah. The kale just was out of control. So
how do you keep it all together?
Oh, I have to say I am a techno snob, and I would totally go into convulsions if I didn't have it. So I have, actually, if you put the mom first, usually the multitasking is part of your training. You learn how to do a million things at once because you will be interrupted. And so I've slowly been adding various things and letting some stuff go, and figuring out my timeline throughout a year to figure out what I can pull off and what I can't. So I don't do all of that all the time. So.
And I also notice, to me, you seem like a very driven person.
Mm-hmm.
What do you attribute that to?
Survivalism. When it comes to my background, I was a creative person, but I also was always able to make connections between a lot of different people and ideas. And I did not like departmentalizing those things. And so just, I guess, in defiance of that nature, I guess people would naturally want to departmentalize all of these things that I do. I became more driven to accomplish all of them, so I have a full understanding of life in general. So when I do all these things together, there's a reason why I do all of them. And it is, it's long-term goals, short-term goals, reflection on the past, all of these things. So there's a lot going on in my head as to why I do things. And so my driven attitude, I have a hard time just letting something go simply because I don't have time. Because if it's a sincere interest of mine, then I will continue to push forward. Yeah, and I'm pretty efficient. So, I am going to grad school, but I'm going for arts and cultural leadership. And when you are doing something like that and running an organization, it makes perfect sense, to be doing those two things at the same time. I'm using actually my first course as a way of reflecting on this installation project at Seeburger. But I think that's how I learned too. I learned that by visually journaling, that's something that I like to do, visual journaling, and by making connections of things in a more complex manner instead of just memorizing something or looking at it and going, I know this and I know that, but heaven forbid they be cross-connected. That's not how I'm programmed. I have to make the connection between A and Z in order to understand the rest of the alphabet. But anytime I've been forced to just focus on one thing and one thing only, I've either become extremely bored or frustrated.
And speaking of connections, you are a very socially oriented artist.
Mm-hmm.
You make extensive use of social media. You paint at public events. Wherever there are art events, you seem to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work out for you?
The social media thing became a necessity at one point. I work for Visual Arts Minnesota, and we are a small organization, one of the smallest in the community, actually. And we hit a point where our website, we couldn't even get into it. So in order to share any information about any of the projects we had going on, I had to utilize Facebook, Twitter. I use MailChimp instead of Constant Contact, but I use things like that in order to build an audience that we didn't even know if they existed or not. So really, all you can do is say, hey, 230 friends that I have. And then I would say that to my board members. Hey, get your friends on board to follow what we're doing. I had to do that because we had no money, but we had no idea what our audience was. The thing is during that time, and back to the idea of survival, I was working several jobs. I worked for a coffee roaster. I worked for an alteration shop that had a gallery built into it, and I had my own life as an artist. And so I used social media in all of those businesses to build an audience to understand why people even want to buy their coffee or get their clothes altered or, you know, showcase their work or whatever. And so I had to learn very quickly, and now I can do it almost second nature. You know, I can't even imagine not posting a little tidbit about either myself or my friends or an image of something odd that I think is cool or tagging events. You know, I'm a huge fan of doing that because it's advertising for people who are working really, really hard. So by giving them a nod, it's like a pat on the back, but it's digital. Yeah, I've been painting in public with the Art Off concept that we came up with for Visual Arts Minnesota. Last year we did painting with a local hip-hop group, ModCon, or Modern Condition. And then this year we did the Zombie Pit String Band. And the reason why we did that is because often when we're at the art crawls, you're seeing a finished product. They may do demos, and they, you know, we might invite artists to come in and say, here, do a demo of how to do a watercolor. Well, they all of a sudden become a teacher. That's different than being an artist in your studio. So when we brought the live painting into play, you don't pay attention to your audience. I had people, I think you were even standing behind me and I barely even knew you were there. Or, you know, there are people that are sitting there going, yeah, I watched you for like 10 minutes and you didn't even look up. And I wasn't being rude. I just was in a zone. And that zone is part of art making, and people should see that. They should appreciate that because musicians do it, and we love it when we see a musician kind of go into that zone instead of just reading off the, you know, the sheet. And in painting and in drawing or whatever, clay, when you see the artist go into the zone, you sit there and appreciate even more the final product. It's no longer just a cup for you to drink from or a painting for you to put up above your sofa. You actually see that somebody put their soul into this and almost let things go around them in order to accomplish and create something that didn't exist.
So back to this point of social media, do you mm-hmm. feel that nowadays social media is a necessity to be a successful artist? I mean, is there still room for reclusive artists?
Funny thing is, I've always wanted to start a business specifically for reclusive artists just so I could help promote them, because they're usually brilliant because they spend a lot of time in the studio because, well, that's how they're programmed. I think I'm just too social of a beast to not use social media. I'm one of those people where if I had the option, I would sit in a coffee shop and have conversations with people all day long, get absolutely nothing done. Absolutely. And but that's because I love people and I love interaction. There's times that it backfires, but, you know, for the most part, you know, I love it. If I could go into the studio every day, like my studio mate, Mary, is able to go into the studio every day for, you know, 4 to 6 hours, early, early morning, sometimes before her husband even wakes up. And she's very good at that. I don't know if I'd be that way. I go into the studio like that maybe over a month's period of time, and then I just sort of burn myself out and then go on. But reclusive artists, I think it's funny. I mean, it is an issue. Some people don't know who they are. And in greater Minnesota, it can be a bit of an issue because you can't be a reclusive artist and then just have an open studio on a Saturday and people walk in the door because you live out in the middle of Buckman.
Let's talk about your book making.
Mm-hmm.
How did you become interested in that?
I started architecture in college and then shuffled my way into art. I still loved structure and I still loved space and everything that architecture kind of gets to the heart of. But I decided to broaden my artistic horizons in hopes that I would go back to architecture at some point. And I haven't yet. But when I was in school, though, there was sort of a renaissance of bookmaking as one of the sculptural art forms. And at the U, University of Minnesota, I had, I think I took papermaking and sculpture and bookbinding. And the bookbinding class just really captured me. I loved it. And if I look back on it, it's probably because in a way it's a mobile, very layered sculpture. It can be. There's a lot of things you can do with it. I haven't touched what some artists have been able to do. I mean, I like the structure of it. And I have my theories on that as to why I like the structure of the book. But I think it's mostly because of my interest in abstraction, which can be messy the way I do it. And so by making books, I'm at least able to settle my brain a little bit. It's the quiet, you know, I don't design while I'm not thinking about it while I'm doing it. I think about it before I do it. I do all the measurements and I do all the math beforehand. And all the design decisions are made beforehand. But when I'm in the mode, it's a really quiet, it's like, you know, on the rocking chair, knitting a sweater. You kind of just let yourself into that process. Because of how I paint, I think that is just the nice balance between the two different creative forms. There's the other flip of it is the visual journaling idea. When I was in college, that was the first time I was able to use the journal, a blank page journal, no lines, nothing, to explore the ideas of what I was learning in school. So I was able to go from algebra to art history to sculpture class to cultural studies and comparative literature. So, I mean, I'm doing everything from talking about, well, math to talking about Marx. And in order to make those connections, I needed one place for all of it to be, you know? And I absorbed more information that way. And so then later on, I was teaching bookbinding because I didn't feel comfortable teaching painting when I was moving out to Greater Minnesota. And then I took a visual journaling class with Julie Bonet here at St. Cloud State. But it was down in the cities and we did an urban, and oh gosh, now I can't think of the name of it. It was urban landscapes. And basically we went all over Minneapolis and St. Paul, took the light rail, and we did observational journaling or sketchnoting and like made notes of everything that we were doing all over town and made my head almost exploded just because the amount of observation we were able to do in such a short period of time became really evident.
You will start out standing, proud to steal her anything she sees. You will start out standing, proud to steal her anything she sees. But you will wind up peeking through her keyhole down upon your knees.
Let's talk about your paintings. You're working on a series of grid paintings. Mm-hmm. What are grid paintings?
I started doing grids after a point in my life where I made some pretty dramatic decisions in my personal life. And I kept doing these ink on paper grids. And I had no idea why I was really doing it. Like I couldn't sit there and say, well, I'm doing it this way and da da da. I couldn't intellectualize it that much. I could a little bit. You know, I was playing with space and relationships and materials and gravity. There were a lot of things that I could pull out of it, but that was like factual stuff to me. Like, I'm this far from the painting. That's why this happened. I mean, I literally couldn't put emotion or anything else into it. And it wasn't until 6 months later that one of my friends straight up said, she goes, I think you're trying to find order in your life. And you've been doing this uncertain of what you were doing. And I didn't really care. I wasn't doing it for income. I wasn't doing it for an exhibition or anything like that. So, but when I pushed it way longer than I probably have pushed almost any simple concept. I mean, I've taken some series, you know, content and over a couple of years played with it, you know, and then did something with it. But this was the first time that consistently I did the same imagery, and I mean almost literally a square with a brush or a pen and on paper. That was all I was doing. And, you know, it might be a grid of maybe 5 squares width by 8, you know, squares height in this drippy India ink, whatever. It was just, it was bizarre that I focused on it so much.
Was it therapeutic?
Yes. Yeah. I think that's what I needed. And so, and then what happened was that after about 8 months, and actually I think I'm pretty sure that once the election was done, I had a bunch of projects with work, and then the election was finished, and I had just some, you know, some issues with my family and stuff like that. That once that once the election was over, then all of a sudden my head just went boom, and I snapped out of it and went, oh my gosh, what was I doing? And I didn't paint pretty much at all winter long, and then all of a sudden, come spring during those snowfalls, which were great for me creatively, but those major snowfalls pulled me back into painting. It also pulled me into color. It actually pulled me into a happier place because of all the stuff that was going on. And so I was able to play around with this content. So the grids, though, came back. But this time I allowed them to be colorful. I started, like, really looking back on what I was doing and going, well, where did that come from? And I realized that I've been doing grids ever since high school and early college because of architecture classes and stuff like that. You work on grid paper, you think in grids, you think in certain parameters, and then you build within those. So like thumbnails, like when you do a thumbnail sketch in a class, and I remember hearing about that first thing my freshman year, not really understanding it. I get it now, obviously, but, you know, I was like, well, thumbnail sketch, you know, I'm literally thinking of my thumb and the nail and not understanding what they're talking about. And so, but we were then taught that thumbnail sketches is how you get to a larger idea. So in a way, I was probably just doing these large thumbnail sketches and then later on added color and then added content because my mind was so subliminally placing these things in place. So a lot of times when I think of grids, though, I think of systems and I think of relationships and I think of patterns, you know. So, but this is all intuitive, really. I don't measure it out or anything like that. I just start hitting the canvas with the idea. And then I keep editing until I'm happy with it. And it could be happy for good reasons. It could be happy for wrong reasons. I don't know. But it was very good for me. And also it was nice to present some abstract work because outside of academia, many people are not. And I, in this region. So I was very happy to just jump in and present this part of me and see how many people relate to it.
Now, this idea of academia and its involvement in art, you're taking master's classes now, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've heard people say that going to school to learn art is sometimes a bad thing, that it poisons your mind to being a natural artist. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm not getting my MFA. That was a very intentional decision. I don't think it poisons our mind. It gives us our vocabulary. I mean, anytime you read a book, anytime you do anything, it adds to your vernacular, I guess. And so I don't find that to be, I find it to be somewhat true, but kind of not true. I don't think you have to be a traditionalist and say, I have to go to a four-year college and do this, and then I'm an artist. No. There's every artist who goes to a four-year undergrad degree will walk out of campus and off a cliff and then don't know. They'll go into sales or work for pennies or be a barista, but they may not be an artist right off the bat. So it's not like you take a test and voila, you're making millions. It's not that at all.
Do they have to unlearn what they learned?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know this because I also studied, because I studied architecture as well as art. We see these professors as deities almost. And we want so badly to gain their acceptance. And what's even worse is that we're art students, so we will never, ever admit it. We will constantly say I'm a nonconformist in a nonconformist room. I mean, it's like, you're never going to say anything. So like my interest in architectural drawings, you know, it's not, that's just because that's what I was fed at a time that I was just a sponge. And obviously I was studying architecture because I was interested in space. I was interested in design and building and materials and all that. So you go through years of reflection on that kind of stuff. And I'm okay with that.
We're talking to artist Heidi Jube, and Heidi, time is just flying by.
Yeah.
Let's briefly touch upon the St. Cloud art scene. What is the state of the St. Cloud art scene, in your opinion?
I think there's a lot of opportunities, both for creative placemaking, which can be also looked at as public art, collaborations with various different organizations. But then individual artists are getting really quality opportunities to showcase their work. I think there's a lot of things that are missing, but because there's such a good energy right now, people are bringing it up. I think that organizations and individuals are starting to get a little fire under their tush in hopes to, you know, move forward on some of these ideas that have been around for 10, 15 years, you know. I've been working on the Seeberger Park project, which has been fun, with Dan Monlock, Heather Allen, and Natalie Ratha, and that's been with the St. Cloud Arts Commission. That's been fun. Surprisingly, it feels initially like we were playing with Legos. It really did. But because we didn't really want to leave it there, and we're artistically driven individuals, we didn't quite want to accept that as being the end all. So we really are trying to engage the community, which of course we use social media as our main way of contacting people. We have these really great conversations while people would walk by on a hot day, and I mean hot days. And also we're able to assess a lot of stuff based on our interactions, which I'm hoping we can document it more, but we've documented a lot of it with images and stuff like that. So we're going to be finishing that up in the next month or so.
Heidi, I can think of no better person than to ask my final question. So what do you think will take St. Cloud, as far as art is concerned, to the next level?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I think that we should find some workspaces for artists where they can freely work, not for free, but maybe live workspaces or something like that. I do believe that should happen. I think that artists should be included in the process of idea generation. They shouldn't have a bunch of people who are coming up with ideas and telling artists what to do. I have an idea to put this on granite. Could you do that for me, since you're so creative? Because you just kiboshed the entire process of the artistic process. That's what makes us so special. I think that a museum, so we can give some tribute to our past, is very important. Oh man, that's actually way more important, because actually, how are we going to keep our students in this community? You know, I think that we lose them because they have no sense of space here. They come here, or place. They have no sense of place. And they come here, go to school, and leave. I have a relationship, say, to my alma mater based on the museums that were nearby. That was how I explored. That's how why I love Minneapolis so much. A museum, I think, would be huge. I think there's talk, but now it needs to go into action. But I think we're at a good place. We just had the 40-year anniversary for the Granite Trio. We have a sculpture in downtown St. Cloud. They can't move it, so why not consider, giving tribute to those people who put that there? And also, there's artwork all over the community that's stuck in people's homes, and nobody's experiencing it. We have new people coming into St. Cloud, new Americans, workers, all sorts of people, medical field, and all they see is what's in the hallway of their job. That's ridiculous. So we really, really, really need to be doing something about that.
And I'm sure things will get done about that. Heidi Jube, thanks for coming into the studio today. It's been great.
Thanks for having me.
She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back. She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back. She can take the dark out of the nighttime and paint the daytime black.
Heidi Jube recently received a grant to create a metal installation with Sartell High School students, which will take place in fall 2013 with the support of a Teaching Roster Artist in Residency grant from the Central Minnesota Arts Board. She sees.
Could you wind up peeking through a keyhole down upon your knees? She never stumbles, she's got no place to fall. She never stumbles, she's got no place to fall. She's nobody's child. The law can't touch her at all.